Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. As we approach the Memorial Day weekend, a story from World War II that was a vague rumor for many years passed from pilot to pilot with no sense of certainty, a moment of humanity in what was a terribly inhumane war. On the morning of December 20th, 1943, the American 8th Air Force once again was launching another bombing raid into Germany. This day, a second lieutenant named Charlie Brown was flying his B-17 in what was known as the Purple Heart Corner, the part of the formation of bombers the Germans were most likely to attack. On the German side, Lieutenant Franz Stigler, a veteran fighter pilot from the Africa Corps all the way back to Germany, was prepared to take his fighter plane up to meet the Americans. What happened several hours later when Stigler came across Brown's badly damaged B-17 was a testament to valor, courage, and honor that harkens back to a more chivalrous time. The story is told by military journalist and writer Adam Makos. His book, A Higher Call, has been a bestseller, an option for a motion picture by British playwright Tom Stoppard. We talk with Adam Makos about his book, which is now out in softcover. Adam Makos, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. Good to be with you.
Give us a sense of how you learned about this story that is told in A Higher Call, the story of a German fighter pilot basically escorting a severely damaged B-17 to neutral ground, basically off to the coast of the North Sea. How did you first discover this? Because from what it reads like in the book, nobody wanted to talk about this.
You're exactly right. It was a story that stayed under wraps for about 50 years or 60 years, and that's one of the reasons I was lucky in that I discovered it first and got to tell it extensively. I was working for an aviation magazine interviewing World War II veterans from Europe and the Pacific, mostly flyers, and they would come to me, these veterans, and they would say, hey, did you ever hear the story of the German fighter pilot who spared the American bomber? And I thought it was a tall tale. I had never heard it, and I kept hearing it from these men, and I said, all right, I've got to look into this. And they said that the American pilot's name was Charlie Brown. So I looked in the phone book and I did some internet searches and I found a Charlie Brown, retired in Miami, Florida. He was about 85 years old, former bomber pilot. And I sent him a copy of my magazine and I said, Charlie, I would love to tell this story. I'd love to get to the bottom of it. And he said, Adam, let me stop you right there. He said, if you really want to do this story better than anyone else has, if you really want to get to the bottom of it, you don't talk to me. And I thought, wait a second, this is the American, he's the bomber pilot, he's the hero, I've got to tell his story. He said, no, you've got to go talk to my older brother, Franz Stigler. He was the German fighter pilot who saved my life. And in this story, he is the hero, I'm just a character. And so, Rich, that threw me for a spin because I had never interviewed a German before, I had never wanted to, I just wanted to tell an American story, but Charlie pointed me toward Franz Stigler.
Now, the idea that both of these pilots would still be alive 50 years later is first amazing. First, that when you think of the losses of American bomber pilots over Europe and also the losses of German fighter pilots, these were highly hazardous duty. Let's put it that way.
It certainly was. The 8th Air Force, where Charlie flew in England, lost more men than the United States Marine Corps in World War II. They were losing, at the time when Charlie was flying in 1943, they were losing about 5% of the planes that went out on a mission, which doesn't sound that bad. You know, 95% come home. But when you go out every day and you're losing 5%, that number adds up, and by the time you reach about 20 missions, you're statistically, you know, past your survival date. And so, yeah, in the Luftwaffe pilots, Franz Stigler to be alive, when I first interviewed him in 2003, that was incredible because most of the Luftwaffe pilots were killed in the war. I think they said out of about 44,000, about 2,000 survived the war. And it's because, unlike our military, Charlie did his 30-odd missions and came home. That was a bomber's tour. In the German Air Force, a fighter pilot flew until he was wounded, killed, or mentally incapacitated and sent to a rest hospital. There was no escape.
Yeah, or until the end of the war.
Or until the war ended, and that's, I guess, how some of them got lucky and they survived because they did get wounded and they did get to sit out the war, and that's how you got that 2,000. Otherwise, they flew until they were killed.
Well, as you began to research this story, you first tell the story of Franz Stigler. Tell us a little about Franz Stigler.
Fascinating man. When I interviewed him, I knew what happened in that 10-minute encounter that the book is centered around, where this amazing event happened in the sky. But the answer to why that happened, what kind of man would take his finger off the trigger and spare his enemy, I had to look way back into Franz's youth. And I think he was happy to tell that story because no one had ever asked before. No one had cared that when Franz was a young boy, he flew gliders with his brother. His father was a World War I pilot who had seen the effects of war, and he never wanted his boys to go through that, but he loved flying. So he said, hey, I'm going to help you build a glider. And these boys would soar over the hills of Bavaria. Well, Franz, he became an airline pilot, very much a natural step, and then all of a sudden World War II breaks out, and he's drafted. Because a lot of people, they say, oh, well, he joined the German military. Well, not really. I mean, in World War II Germany, when suddenly Hitler throws you into war with half the world, there was no such thing as sitting on the sidelines. Everyone had to fight. Everyone was drafted. And so Franz became a flight instructor, and one of his students was his own brother, of all the people. And he trains his brother to fly, sends him off to war, and his brother was immediately killed. And Franz then succumbed to that human emotion. He wanted revenge, and he said, I want to be a fighter pilot. I want to avenge my brother. And that's how he wound up as a fighter pilot in Africa, where he learned a very important lesson that would later on save Charlie Brown's life.
In fact, you talk about the esprit de corps in the Africa Corps among the Air Force, and there was a major sense of chivalry among those group of officers, at least the way Franz tells it. He had a commanding officer said, our purpose is to down the machine, not necessarily kill the pilot.
Yes, Rich, that was the prevailing attitude. And it was when Franz reported to the desert, it was a big shock on a lot of levels. It's barren, it's hot, it's like another world, so far from civilization. And at the same time, they were fighting by these old rules that were archaic. I mean, they were the rules of the knights. They were the rules of World War I, and it was a code of chivalry was in place because at that time it was the same enemies from World War I fighting. So it was the British and Germans squaring off in the desert. And in World War I, there were stories of a British pilot would be shot down behind the German lines and killed and in his crash. And the Germans would fly over his airfield and drop a note that says, we regret to inform you that your pilot was killed. And we buried him with full honors, and here are pictures of the funeral. And there were just events like that. It's kind of a warm, fuzzy, heartwarming thing that when your enemy would be shot down and captured, if your pilots got to him, they would host him for dinner that night and salute him and then send him to a POW camp. But there was camaraderie between aviators, even of different nations. And in the desert, that was alive and well. And that's where Franz learned an important lesson, because here he's this young, hot-headed kid bent on revenge, and his squadron leader saw that. The squadron leader was a man named Rodel, Gustav Rodel, and before their first mission, Rodel sat Franz down. He said, Franz, what are you going to do if you shoot down a man today, and he bails out of his plane, he's floating in his parachute? Will you salute him? Will you strafe him? What are you going to do? And Franz said, I'll worry about it if it happens, because Franz was just trying to survive. He wasn't really thinking about his victories. And Rodel said, well, let me tell you what will happen. If I ever see you shoot a man in a parachute or hear that you did it, I'll shoot you myself. And Franz starts shaking in his boots because not only is he going up against the British and they're going to outnumber him, but his own commander just threatened to kill him. And Rodel said, now let me explain why I tell you this, Franz. He said, here we fight by the rules, and you fight by the rules not for your enemy's good. You fight by the rules for your good. That's why you play by the rules, so that you can keep your humanity. So that if you survive this, you can look yourself in the mirror and you can keep your soul. And that lesson stayed with Franz, and I don't think he would have learned it anywhere else but the desert. And later on, that lesson came around to help save Charlie Brown.
And of course, once Germany is experiencing bombing, especially around the clock, a lot of those niceties did fall by the wayside, especially as that older generation of pilots were dying in the Battle of Britain, defending Germany from the bombardments that would happen. A lot of that fell by the wayside. So that makes it sort of all the more impressive what this German pilot did, Franz Stiegler.
Yes, you're right. It was almost as if with every passing year of war, and I think we see it today, there is no such thing as chivalry. With every passing year, chivalry has diminished. So yes, the younger pilots who were fighting in 1944 were very different from the men who were fighting in 41 and 42. And the Americans were different than the British, because we came in and we didn't have that sort of sporting attitude, the flying club mentality. We were there to win the war so we could go home. You know, we weren't there to be gentlemen or aristocrats. So we had sort of a take-no-prisoners attitude in a lot of cases for good reason. We wanted to end this thing. And the one way that the chivalry did prevail, and Franz was part of this, when an American airman would be shot down in Germany, a lot of times civilians would try to lynch the pilot or crew because their city had been bombed. Maybe they were displaced civilians. Maybe they were farmers whose livestock had been strafed. And so there were a lot of Americans killed by pitchfork, you know, killed by mobs with stones. And so the German pilots, and a lot of times even the ground crew, if they saw a bomber go down, they would hurry to the spot as quickly as possible. And they would many times take the American airmen as their prisoner to get them away from the civilians. And then they would show them great respect before they sent them off to a POW camp. And a Luftwaffe POW camp was not the worst place in the world to be. It was oppressive, but it wasn't a death camp by any means. So that chivalry did exist. It kind of existed on the ground. It faded from the air. But that one day, it existed between Charlie Brown and Franz Stiegler like never before.
Now, tell us a little bit about Charlie Brown. He was a farm boy from West Virginia, ended up flying B-17s.
Yes, it's quite incredible when you think about it. He was 21 at the time. He had to tell his crew he was 24 because he knew that these other nine men, who many of whom were older than him, would be scared to death if they knew they were flying with a 21-year-old. And, I mean, we're talking about a machine that can go up to 30,000 feet, that can fly from London to Moscow and keep going. It was just an incredible machine to put in the hands of a 21-year-old. And you look at kids today, you know, sometimes you question whether they should be driving at 16 or 18. And here Charlie is taking nine other young men up into the sky and flying in tight formation in a B-17. It was quite a feat because he was a farm boy. He was a kid from West Virginia, and he had been a janitor at one point. So Charlie's a kind of a rags-to-riches story. And that mission where he met Franz Stiegler was the first mission with his crew. And they were assigned to the worst spot in the formation, Purple Heart Corner, way down at the bottom. So it was just an ominous start to the day. And that 21-year-old pilot made one mistake, which I can tell you about, just one mistake that day, that led to this big encounter.
All right. My guest today is Adam Makos, a journalist and historian. He's the editor of the military magazine Valor and the author of A Higher Call, an incredibly true story of combat and chivalry in the skies of World War II. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. It's out in trade paperback after coming out last year as we prepare for Memorial Day weekend, telling a story from World War II. So it was a mission over Bremen. They drop the bombs, they get a little bit of flak. What happened that led to this intervention from this German pilot? What did Charlie Brown do that got him into trouble?
He survived an attack by 15 fighters, so that was much to his credit. They were attacked because they were hit over the target. They lost two engines, essentially. They fell out of formation. They were left behind. Jumped by fighters. The bomber was shot to pieces, nose to tail, and eventually it fell out of the sky. And Charlie Brown recovered control of the aircraft just above the treetops of a German city. And he flew over the city, and he started racing for the north coast. And the goal was to get out over the North Sea, to get away from the German flak and the fighters, and steer home to England. And he made one mistake that day. In trying to keep this plane in the air, he failed to notice a German airfield ahead and to his right. And he flew right over it. It was made of grass. And there, Franz Stiegler was standing next to his plane. He had just rearmed, he had just refueled, and he had already shot down one bomber that day. And so here he was ready to take off, and he did, and he launched. And Franz had shot down 22 planes by then. He had become quite an ace, and he quickly tracked down Charlie's plane. And Charlie, you know, Charlie didn't see him coming. Charlie never saw Franz coming, but Franz clearly saw Charlie. As he pulled up behind this bomber, The Franz saw the tail, how it was shredded by bullets. He saw that there was bullet holes in every square foot of the bomber. And because the bomber was painted green, the bullet holes would be silver. And so it just looked like this thing was pockmarked. And he came closer and closer, and he put his finger on the trigger, and he said, "All right, when you shoot at me, I'm going to shoot at you, and it'll be a fair fight, and we'll let God sort it out." And in this case, Charlie's tail gunner never fired at him. And Franz came closer and closer, and he found out why. The tail gunner was dead. His blood was streaming down the barrels of the gun. And that's when Franz, for the first time, he had never seen a dead man before in the sky. And he saw this bomber that was defenseless, and he forgot for a moment that he was a German fighter pilot. He just was marveling at this American plane because he'd never seen anything so damaged that was still flying. And the next thing he did was quite incredible, because other pilots would have said, all right, I'm not going to shoot it down. I'm just going to fly away. Franz took his finger off the trigger, and he said, I'm going to stay with this bomber, because not only am I going to let it live, I'm going to help it escape. And that was one of the more incredible things in World War II, when he pulled up alongside, and he looked over, and he saw the wounded crewmen in the waist window caring for one another. He pulled up further, up to the wing, and he looked across that space at the pilot, and he saw this young American pilot there. And then suddenly Charlie Brown noticed the shadow on his right, and he looks over, and there's a German fighter pilot on his wing. And Charlie closed his eyes, he shook his head, and he thought he was living a nightmare. So really, his nightmare was his guardian angel.
And in fact, he escorted him over a coastal unit that had anti-aircraft guns. And in fact, when they saw the plane leading the B-17, they didn't fire because they thought it was a captured B-17.
Exactly. The Germans during the war captured roughly 20 or more B-17s that they rebuilt, and they flew on sometimes classified missions because it had a range that just no German bomber had at the time. And so, they saw Franz Stiegler there. They didn't know who it was. And Franz is lucky no one knew who he was, because what he was doing was treason. He would have easily been killed. He would have been given a firing squad or even a guillotine. They were using that in those days in Germany. That summer, a woman had told a joke in a factory, an anti-Hitler joke, and they chopped off her head for it. Mm. So here's Franz flying alongside of this American bomber, and he stayed there because he knew that if another German fighter came along, he would knock this bomber out of the sky. He also knew if the flak gunners on the ground saw this bomber, they would knock it out of the sky. It was limping home. It was a sitting duck. And so he stayed with it, and he nodded to Charlie, and he smiled at Charlie, and Charlie didn't smile back. Charlie was terrified. And the two of them flew out for 10 minutes out over the ocean. Finally, Franz said, good luck, you're in God's hands. He saluted his enemy, and he peeled off and flew away. And the encounter was over, but Charlie would never forget that man's face.
Of course, he does make it back to England, and he lands. He's at his debriefing. The officer conducting the debriefing says, you're all going to get medals for heroism. And then he mentions the fact that, well, there was this last German fighter that escorted us to the coast, and everything changed.
Exactly, Rich. And that's where the story became suppressed for the 60-odd years. What happened, the brass didn't want word of a good German escaping, because it's the middle of wartime. We haven't even landed on French soil. We're not in Italy. It's just a mess. And basically, they didn't want bomber gunners to take their fingers off the trigger and to say, oh, wait, maybe this is a good German coming up. Maybe this one wants to fly with us, alongside of us. Oh, I've never seen a Messerschmitt that close. They didn't want anybody even hesitating a split second to pull the trigger. So they said, Charlie, never mention this again. And so Charlie held that vow for a long time, and Franz couldn't mention it. He would be court-martialed, killed, or he would betray his friends if they even found out. So both men kept the secret till their very old ages.
Now, what made that secret come out? How did Charlie and Franz make connections?
It's quite an incredible thing. Charlie was at a bomb group reunion, and everybody was swapping war stories. And Charlie said, well, you know what? I sometimes wonder if it was a dream, but once I was saluted by a German fighter pilot. And all of the other guys at the table, you know, they're all sipping scotch, and they just start laughing, and they say, what are you talking about? And Charlie told the story, and it slowly came back to his memory. He had long forgotten it. And they encouraged him. They said, Charlie, what if this guy is still alive? If this is real, what if this guy is still out there? And Charlie said, no, all the Luftwaffe pilots were wiped out in the war, and it's 50 years later. This happened about 1989. He said, there's no way he's alive. And they said, well, you owe it to him to look. And Franz, that whole, for the rest of his life, he had only known loss. He had lost his brother in the war. He had lost his father. He had lost all of his friends. He lost his country. He eventually moved to Canada because he couldn't stand to see the ruined cities around him, and the people blamed him for it. They blamed fighter pilots for losing the war. And so Franz was living in Vancouver, Canada, and Charlie searched the world for him. And I can kind of ruin the story, but let me just say he found him. And we'll save how he found him for the reader to discover. But these two men reunited in 1990, and they hugged and they cried and they met in Seattle. And after that day, they decided to become friends. And they started to, they would go to air shows together, they'd go to museums together, and they would tell their story that enemies can become friends. And eventually they became closer than friends. They called themselves brothers. And that was how Charlie introduced Franz to me. He said, "You're going to go meet my brother, Franz Stiegler." And Franz would say, "In World War II, I lost my brother in 1940. He was a night fighter, and I gained another brother." And so that's what made it, to me, one of the most incredible stories of World War II. Not only that Franz spared Charlie's life, but Charlie later found Franz and essentially became the one good thing to come out of World War II for Franz Stiegler.
It's amazing that nobody discovered this story. I mean, I know the American brass suppressed the story from the crew, but nobody found out on the German side. Why do you suppose that was?
That's a fine question. I think on the German side, Franz was lucky because he was operating alone that day. He had already shot down a bomber, he landed to refuel, and he was essentially taking off on his own will and chasing down this bomber on his own will without orders. And when he came back, everybody said, Where'd you go? Where was it? And he said, "Oh, the bomber got away." And that was it. And so the story just slipped through the radar. And even the U.S. Air Force, which was incredible, they had ignored, you know, this heroism for a long time. Well, in 2007, they awarded Charlie, they looked into it, into this story, and they awarded Charlie the Air Force Cross. And they awarded every one of his crewmen a Silver Star. And so in the snap of the fingers, the Air Force reversed their decision of 1943, and they suddenly made Charlie and his bomber crew one of the most decorated crews in history, easily the top three. Franz never got a medal, but as he said, he got something better. He got a brother. And, you know, Rich, the really cool thing about this, when I was researching it, I was in Charlie's library, and I found a book that Franz had given him as a gift about the German jet fighters. And the book had an inscription, and I wasn't supposed to see this, and it said, "On December 20, 1943, I had the chance to save a B-17 from her destruction, a plane so badly damaged it was a wonder she was still flying. The pilot, Charlie Brown, is to me as precious as my brother was. Thanks, Charlie. Your brother, Franz."
Mm.
And I read that, and I closed the book, and I said, "Oh, my God, it's all real." And I put it back on the bookshelf, and I never told Charlie I found it. But I was never supposed to see that. The world was never supposed to hear that. But it's true that two enemies became brothers, and these two men genuinely felt that about each other. And then when they died, Franz died in the spring of 2008. Charlie died in the fall. And as people said, I saw in an online obituary, first of all, Franz's obituary said, "Survived by special brother Charlie Brown." And someone said, "You know, I bet you when Charlie dies and he gets up to heaven, he'll have an escort waiting for him through the gates."
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, it's a very remarkable story, and you tell the story very well. And, of course, this is something you've been involved in a good part of your adult life, is documenting these stories, which, of course, are disappearing very fast. We're losing World War II veterans just thousands a year. Talk about your work. I mean, this is something you've done a lot of, speaking with veterans and capturing their stories.
It's been a great privilege, Rich. I'm 33 right now, and I've grown up around the greatest generation. I mean, my best friends in high school and college were not people in fraternities or on the football team. It was the veterans I would interview on the weekend. And I think they leave us a lesson of their character, their humility, the simple, proud lives that they lived. And today I think we slip away from that a little more and more, and we've got to look back at these stories, at men like Charlie Brown and Franz Stiegler, these sort of quiet, humble, proud warriors who, even though Franz fought on the wrong side, you know, he fought a very difficult battle because he didn't even believe in the war he was fighting in, yet he had to fight for his country, yet he had to fight for his brother. And Charlie Brown leaves his home in West Virginia, a kid who's never seen anything more than a farm, and he rises up to become who he was. These men can teach us a lot, and so they've changed me. And this book, I believe, will change the reader. It's different from any World War II story you've ever heard before, because no World War II book has ever had the ability to tell the same battle from both sides on such an intimate level as two men who pointed guns at each other. That just never happened. and it'll change you. It'll change your perspective on World War II. It'll change your perspective on other wars. And it's a beautiful story, and it's going to be a movie, too, which is pretty exciting. That's in the pipeline.
All right. After the war, what did these gentlemen do in their post-war lives?
Charlie Brown retired from the Air Force as a lieutenant colonel. He retired to Miami, loved to play golf, and just he had a wife and two daughters.
So he was a career military officer?
Yes, he made a career out of it. He was in military intelligence later on, if you can believe that. I mean, after they're the ones who suppressed his story, but he joined them eventually. And he respected that. You know, he understood it. And that was one of the things I think today people would say, hey, I did this, I did that. I brought my crew home. I deserve a medal. And when you didn't get a medal, they would cry and they'd pout and they'd post on Facebook that, I should have gotten a medal. No, Charlie Brown just sucked it up. Franz Stiegler, he moved to Canada, worked in the lumber industry, fixing diesel equipment. He loved it because he was in the mountains of Vancouver. It was snowy and it was pretty, just like Bavaria. And he found peace there because, you know, again, his city was destroyed, and people, the German people, blamed the pilots for losing the war, for seeing their cities destroyed, because they said, well, somebody didn't stop the bombers from dropping their bombs. That was your job. So Franz became an outcast, and luckily he found peace in Canada, and he married a German girl and flew her over. And, you know, at the end of his life, he finds Charlie Brown, and he gets to have the greatest thrill of all. A new friend, and the two spread their story, which is the greatest thing. They didn't just shake hands and go their separate ways. They actively toured together, and they had beer together, and they did speeches together, and they became family.
The name of the book is A Higher Call. What's the status of a movie on this?
Well, the rights were optioned by a man named Sir Tom Stoppard, one of England's greatest playwrights.
Wow.
He had also written, Empire of the Sun.
Yes, no, he's a well-known playwright and novelist, yeah.
Yeah, and he also did Shakespeare in Love and others, and so, which I'm really glad to see, because he makes a quality production, and so the book, you know, A Higher Call spent, it's now 20 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, which is great, and the incredible thing, Rich, is that the story has transcended America, and it became a bestseller, number 3 in the UK when it came out. And that's quite incredible in its own right, because the British were bombed by the Germans, you know, and the Battle of Britain took place, and these were the guys who initially fought each other in the war, and to see the British people who saw their cities bombed and who lost their families embracing this story almost more than the Americans have, it's incredible. And the Polish bought this book, and they're going to be publishing it, and the Hungarians and the French, and finally the Germans are publishing it this fall. There was a lot of guilt on their end. Oh, can we celebrate one of our people? But you know what? When they see that the countries that they occupied during the war, that they oppressed, are recognizing the beauty of this story, then I think finally the Germans came around to it. So it's transcending nationalities and borders, because it's a story of humanity, and it's a story we can all learn from.
All right. The name of the book is A Higher Call. Adam Makos, thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, it's been great talking to you.
Military journalist and writer Adam Makos speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. His book, A Higher Call, an incredibly true story of combat and chivalry in the war-torn skies of World War II, a New York Times bestseller, is now out in paperback. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you miss one of our recent broadcasts, you can listen online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Just search for Studio Tulsa, look for our most recent shows, or you can search through our archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.